G-Save is out, and War on Terror is back in. The global war on terror is the catchphrase the administration started using to describe our response to the 9/11 attacks. G-Save, an acronym for Global Struggle Against Violent Extremism, was adopted recently by some administration and Pentagon officials and signaled a change in policy. But the president this week came out on the side of the war on terror. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has these thoughts on the use of slogans.
80 years ago, Walter Lippmann wrote that the art of building political consensus rests on using symbols which assemble emotions after they've been detached from their ideas. For those purposes, the phrase the war on terror has a lot going for it. Whatever the facts of the matter, it compacts the response to the 9/11 attacks and the military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq under a single pithy heading, and it adds the note of urgent purpose that war always trails behind it. But the reductiveness of symbols can make for some awkwardness when realities become too obtrusive to ignore. That's presumably what led Donald Rumsfeld and other senior officials to announce last week that the operant phrase would henceforth be the global struggle against violent extremism. According to General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the new phrase was meant to suggest that the solution is more diplomatic, more economic, more political than it is military. But in a speech in Texas Wednesday, the president made it clear that he was having none of it. "Make no mistake about it, we're at war," he said, and proceeded to use the phrase war on terror 5 more times. This isn't simply about whether we're in a war or not, but whether we need a stirring slogan for it. The global struggle against violent extremism doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. Staggers is more like it. It sounds like something designed by a committee. It doesn't rebrand the administration strategy so much as unbrand it, using a generic wrapper that raises no specific expectations. But that isn't how Bush operates. From compassionate conservatism to the ownership society to No Child Left Behind, this administration has lived by slogans. True, there have been a few missteps, like the Mission Accomplished banner that was posted behind the president aboard the USS Lincoln in May of 2003. With the wisdom of hindsight, the organizers of that event would probably have gone with something more noncommittal, like, "Way to go, guys." But when it comes to the crunch, even a reductive slogan is better than a forgettable one. Politicians have been bandying catchphrases since the time of Cato the Elder, who closed every speech he made in the Roman Senate with his hallmark "Carthago delenda est," Carthage must be destroyed. But there's something wholly modern about the way people use language so widely to package missions, policies, and programs nowadays. The business of giving military operations media-friendly names only began in 1989 when the first Bush administration labeled its invasion of Panama Operation Just Cause. By contrast, back in 1957, President Eisenhower sent the Marines to Lebanon under the designation Operation Blue Bat, a wasted naming opportunity that would bring a modern Pentagon publicist to tears. And it's only in recent years that legislators have been naming the bills they introduce with an eye to the acronyms they form. You have the image of the congressional staffers who wrote the USA Patriot Act sitting up till the wee hours with a thesaurus until they came up with Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. The Bush administration has merely taken packaging to a more systematic level, wallpapering the backdrops at presidential appearances with slogans like "Jobs and Growth" when Bush pushes for his tax cuts, or "Compassion in Action" when he speaks about AIDS. This all has less to do with ideology than with the triumph of modern marketing, and in particular, the idea that the right choice of words can trigger associations at a deep subconscious level that will put a product or policy over in the public's mind. That assumption has made a media icon out of Frank Luntz, the pollster who got the Republicans to rebaptize vouchers as opportunity scholarships and to substitute climate change for global warming. Luntz's influence has become so legendary that he's even been credited with inventing the phrase tax relief, which actually goes back to Al Smith. In response, the Democrats have been trying to find their own magic words, with ubiquitous talk of messaging, narrative, and framing. It's as if to say that if voters haven't gotten the point, it's because what we have here is a failure to communicate. There's no question that a good slogan can capture the public's attention, and that a bad one can leave you marooned on C-SPAN. The Democrats would score a lot more points if they didn't insist on using wonky locutions like single payer and unfunded mandates. But for all the allure of notions like framing and messaging, it's actually hard to think of many cases where a choice of language has ultimately made a big difference in shifting public attitudes. Healthy Forests and No Child Left Behind may suggest a new, more sensitive Republican Party, but the majority of voters still give the Democrats the edge on the environment and education. And despite Bush's tireless invocations of the ownership society, the public's been cool to his proposals for privatizing Social Security, even after the Republicans switched to talking about personal accounts after private accounts turned out not to poll well. The fact is that however suggestive they are, names and slogans can't transform opinion once people sense that they don't correspond to perceptions. You think of General Motors' futile efforts to rescue the moribund Oldsmobile line in the 1990s. They kept saying, "This is not your father's Oldsmobile," but everybody could see that that's exactly what it was. That's the risk of using slogans. They give people something to hold you to when reality comes up short.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and author of Going Nuclear,